Welcome to the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff. Our mission is to equip you with answers to share the hope that you have within you, because life and truth matter. Why? Because being armed with truth will equip you to counter the corrosive worldviews at work in our world today, while experiencing the authentic Christian life will make you a winsome witness of the purpose of life, which is to experience union with God and Christ, both for today and for all eternity. Our phone number is 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can find us online at equip.org. That's equip.org. And now, to begin today's broadcast, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. You can also contact us via the mail by writing me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. We kick off the broadcast today with a Facebook question from Steve. And the reason I'm addressing this question on the air is that this is a question that is showing up not only in Christian homes, but also in Christian churches. Steve says that they are a Christian family and have been confronted with an article that claims that in 1 Corinthians 6:9, the famous passage by the Apostle Paul that condemns homosexuality, in reality, that passage is condemning the practice of men molesting boys, not consensual same-sex sexual behavior in general. And thus, modern English translations, according to this article, that are using the generic term homosexual are misleading and false. They're fabrications. And so Steve says, any help with this would be greatly appreciated. Well, the truth of the matter is that this article that Christians are being confronted with is itself a fabrication with respect to truth. The 1984 edition of the New International Version translates the noun arsenikoitai, which is found in 1 Corinthians 6:9, with the words homosexual offenders. So the way in which that verse properly reads is, do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Don't be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexual offenders, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. So you have a whole litany of behaviors that are antithetical to kingdom living, to being citizens of the kingdom of God. And by the way, the English Standard Version translates the same word as homosexuality. Not only that, but the New American Standard Bible uses the word homosexuals. Now, modern translations are indeed correct when they communicate Paul's denouncement of all forms of same-sex sexual behavior, not restricting the meaning to arsenikoitai, but the practice of older men having sex with younger boys, in other words, sexual molestation. The Greek word arsenikoitai was actually in reality coined by the Apostle Paul, and he does so by way of the Greek translation of the Old Testament Hebrew, which is found in Leviticus chapter 18 as well as Leviticus chapter 20. So in Leviticus 18, As well as 20, the Hebrew words zakar, meaning male, and mishkav, meaning bed or lying sexually, are rendered in the Septuagint by the words arson, meaning male, and koite, meaning a structure for lying down or figuratively engagement in sexual relations. You shall not lie with a male as one lies with a female. It is an abomination. Those are the words of the Old Testament. So if there is a man who lies with a male, as those who lie with a woman, both of them have committed a detestable act. So here's the bottom line, both context and semantics. Semantics, of course, being word meaning, make clear that it is same-sex sexual behavior in general that is being condemned in the passage in question, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. So this article that is finding its way into churches is distorting the truth with respect to the translations of the Bible. The translations of the Bible that I mentioned, the NIV, the English Standard Version, the New American Standard Bible, all of them are correctly designating the sin that is in question as homosexual offenders or homosexuality. Of course, this whole issue of same-sex sexuality, homosexuality, transsexuality, the LGBTQ community, it's oftentimes called a community, but often the parts of the community designated by the letters are not in harmony with one another. And that certainly is true with respect to transgender sex or transgender sexuality. In fact, there's a book that I'm reading by a homosexual who is a very, very good communicator who is pointing out all of the problems with the transgender revolution. So it's not only something that Christians are concerned with, but even people in the homosexual community themselves are concerned with what is happening in this transgender revolution. Not only that, but there are medical experts that are concerned. In the book that we have as a radio offer, it is titled God and the Transgender Debate, available for those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. There's a doctor named Paul McHugh who says transgendered men do not become women, nor do transgendered women become men. All of them, including Bruce Jenner, become feminized men or masculinized women, counterfeits or impersonators of the sex with which they identify. Now, this is not some trifling fundamentalist that is saying this. This is one of the most esteemed psychiatrists of our day. He serves as the University Distinguished Professor of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Medical School and was the former psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And again, he is making a very, very significant statement. And this is perhaps why. If you look at the article and the picture in Vanity Fair, it was the cover of Vanity Fair, that shows Bruce Jenner, who transitioned to the name Caitlyn Jenner, you will see a picture that does a tremendous amount to forward the transsexual agenda. But in reality, it is very duplicitous. For example, if you look closely at that picture, one of the things you're going to notice is that you don't see the hands of Bruce Jenner. Now, why is that? Because the hands of a man are very, very different than the hands of a woman. And to try to make the hands of a man look like the hands of a woman would require radical surgery that likely would negate the proper use of your hands to begin with. And this, of course, is the very thing that is happening with people. They are being portrayed as being another gender or another sex, but you can't decouple the two to begin with, and you can't ultimately take chromosomes and re-engineer them. They can't be scrubbed from the software of our bodies. You can put lipstick on, you can put false eyelashes on, you can augment the breasts, you can augment the hips, but you can't re-engineer, remove, or scrub from the software of our bodies the fact that we are created a certain sexual being, and that at the cellular level. Again, the information in God and the transgender debate not only highlights the significance of the problem, but also gives the solution, answers to tough questions that are being asked in our culture. We'll be back in just a few moments. Do remember the resources that I talk about on the broadcast you can find on the web at equip.org or write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. We'll be right back.
The transgender agenda has taken the world by storm, leaving many Christians uncertain of how to respond to a society seeking to dismantle what it means to be male or female. In God and the Transgender Debate, Andrew T. Walker explores what it means to be male or female and shows how we can think through the various views on gender from a biblical perspective. If you want to understand what the Bible teaches about sex and gender, this book is a must read. To receive your copy of God and the Transgender Debate, What Does the Bible Actually Say About Gender Identity?, just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. 888-7000-CRI or go to equip.org. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more answers from the Bible Answer Man. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles that equip you to exercise truth and experience life. Here's what's in the current special double issue of the Christian Research Journal. Because questions remain about the earliest moments of the universe, scientists offer speculative alternatives to our universe having an actual beginning. Nevertheless, the science that is known to be true provides abundant evidence that the universe came into being a finite time ago, just as the Bible teaches. Other topics include how Dante's Inferno can help explain hell to modern seekers, Christian apologetics in a nutshell, John Chrysostom, the Golden Mouth Preacher, Christian imagination and the problem of horrendous evil, and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. Throughout history, gender was understood as binary, male or female. Today, Facebook offers over 50 gender options for its members. If you're feeling confused, you're not alone. What is transgenderism and gender fluidity? In a culture ready to label anyone who questions the transgender agenda as hateful and bigoted, how should Christians respond? Christians need to understand and provide a biblical response to the transgender agenda, which is why the book God and the Transgender Debate by Andrew T. Walker is a resource every Christian must read to understand the issue of transgenderism and what the Bible actually says about gender identity. To receive your copy of God and the Transgender Debate, What Does the Bible Actually Say About Gender Identity? Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Now back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Let's go right to the phone calls. Mike in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi, Hank. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for everything that you do. Question, as a born-again Christian, how do we, in love, speak? How would God want us to speak in love with a homosexual person and telling them that the disrespect they have for themselves is, like in a nice way, how do we tell them that there's the disrespect they have them for themselves should not be anybody else's problem?
Well, I think the adage that we use all the time, 1 Peter 3:15, is that we're always to be equipped to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within us, and we are to do that with gentleness and with respect. So the evident factor here is that what we do is not out of self-righteousness, but genuine love for other people. And this is the very thing that motivates a biblical worldview to want to transform the culture to Christ. Because whenever you stand against those principles that God stands against, then you're going to get hurt. You know, for example, if you stand on the Eiffel Tower and say, I don't really care about God's law of gravity, I can break it if I want to. Well, the only thing that gets broken in the process is you. So if you're a child that doesn't know any better, and I wouldn't imagine that children wouldn't know any better, I think they would just innately. They know not to jump off the Eiffel Tower. But if they didn't know, for some reason, you would tell them. But you would do that with reasonableness, with gentleness, and with respect. God has carefully defined the borders of human sexuality, and he's done that for the benefit of humankind. So there's no hate there, there's no bigotry. This is pure love. And to reiterate what God says in a way that is with gentleness and with respect is precisely what we are called to do. We're called to stand against the tide. And it's kind of interesting that if you look, and going back to a question that came up yesterday, you go back to Peter's commentary on what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah, where God rescued Lot. And Lot is called a righteous man because he was, as Peter puts it, distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men. For that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue godly men from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment while continuing their punishment. So we're not the one that ultimately is in charge for meting out punishment, but we are in charge for standing against a culture that is seeking to sweep away a civilization that is based on the values of the biblical ethic.
Yeah, thanks, Hank. I guess not knowing is okay in God's eyes. And if they don't know any better, I guess that's okay. But once they do know and know the truth,
yeah, although, Mike, I would argue that they do know better. In other words, even the godless nations or the nations that did not hear the message of the patriarchs were held accountable for their sin because natural law was sufficient to let them know that there was a God and that God defined these kinds of matters in the category of sin. So natural law was enough. It's written on the canvas of their consciousness to make them guilty for the sins of perversion that they engaged in. And of course, what they do is they reject the truth in ungodliness. And that's why Paul says that the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the ungodliness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth in their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them, for since the creation of the world, his invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. And then Paul goes on to say, they knew God, but they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be very, very wise, they became fools. They exchanged the glory of the immortal God for those things that are made in their own image and likeness, and that which is their truth as opposed to objective truth, that which becomes subjective as opposed to kneeling before the one that created them. And again, this is not just obvious to a Christian, this is obvious to everyone.
Well said, Hank. Thank you.
You got it. And there's so much I want to say about this subject, and we'll do that throughout the course of this month, because the transgender debate, and the title of the book available on the web at equip.org is God and the Transgender Debate, is a debate in which there are a cacophony of voices. I mean, think about Elizabeth Warren, for example, who says that her Secretary of Education, should she become President of the United States, will first have to be approved by a young trans person. Why does she say that? Well, because like it or not, gender identity is fast becoming the most fashionable social justice issue of our day. And, you know, as I mentioned the other day on the broadcast, the evidence is replete with the fact that Facebook now offers over 50 gender options. And New York is fining citizens who fail to use preferred pronouns of transgendered citizens. So we have influential sectors of our culture, the education industry, the entertainment industry, the environmental industry. They're no longer influenced by the Christian worldview, nor are such sectors sympathetic to Christian values. Now, we can curse the darkness, or we could build a lighthouse in the midst of the gathering storm. The reason that I am offering this book is this is not an issue to which we can turn a blind eye. This is a transcendently important issue. We have, in effect today, traded in a Christian worldview and a Christian civilization for a Gnostic notion that gender and biology are distinct, that a man can identify as a woman irrespective of biology. The twin dictums that now govern the post-Christian worldview are do not judge anyone else's point of view, and if it feels good, or if it seems right, well, just do it. And not only that, but gender no longer means what gender used to mean. In the Dark Ages, talking humorously about a decade ago, gender and sex were coupled together. In our new age of supposed enlightenment, we are decoupling the two. And in the process, we have altered the meaning of both. Your sex and your gender ought not to be decoupled. That would be coupled together. If you have XX chromosomes or XY chromosomes, they are coupled with gender. You can't decouple that. XX chromosome is a female gender. An XY chromosome is a male gender. That's how civilization has always, always seen it. Until, of course, recently, the last decade or so, all the norms have been turned on their head, and there is a policing that is taking place now where you have to be politically correct, and if you are not, you're going to pay a fine for it. Well, Christians have to stand against the tide no matter what the cost. We have to stand for truth. Be it kicked off a radio station, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Stand for truth no matter what the cost. God and the Transgender Debate, available for your support. Check it out on the web at equip.org. I hope many of you are concerned about this issue as I am. And I think sometimes to be concerned, you have to really understand what the underlying issues are. They're foundational to all of human civilization. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the show.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Before we sign off today, here's our contact information. By phone, dial 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274. On the internet, go to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina. The zip code is 28271. Our prayer is that today's broadcast has equipped you to better defend your faith and encouraged you to pursue sound doctrine and godly living. Thank you for listening. The preceding program was pre-recorded. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.